lab went wrong?
Don't know. Doc knew about it, the bastard.
Where are we, Mr. Carter?
Ryan drew the lapper, finger on the trigger.
We're still in the redoubt, and we're still alive. Your trick didn't work, Doc.
Trick? Upon my soul, but it is no trick. And it did work.
Like hell. Knocked us on our asses, that's all.
Doc was up, tottering, steadying himself with a hand on the streaked glass of the wall. Everyone was now back to some degree of awareness.
What color were the walls of the gateway in the redoubt, Mr. Carter?
Brown and... Fireblast. These are green. They've changed.
No, we've changed. The gateway worked. We are no longer within the redoubt in the darks.
That was enough to bring them all to their feet. JB stood quickly, then doubled over.
Damn! What do you mean we're not in the darks anymore? Where the hell are we then?
Ah, that is one of the many problems with the gateways. Not always reliable. It depends on destination setting. You see, they started here about 100 years back trying to transmit matter. They began with a pair of small metal balls. Light gray metal balls. They got them to travel a few centimeters. And they went on from there. They wanted to use it for military purposes, but the big war stopped that cold. By then, they'd set up a network of these redoubts, each with gates. Send and receive. And some big mistakes. Horrible, horrible things happened.
While he listened, Ryan moved around the room. The walls were certainly a changed color, and the air tasted different. Not flat and dead as in the redoubt. Was all this possible? Had the fog been a Lucy gas? Was this all some chem dream? Ryan reached to open the door, but Doc waved a hand to stop him.
Not yet, Ryan. Nearly done. Gates can be set, as this one was, but all codes are now lost. Lost forever. So it's a gamble where and when you get out.
But some of these gates must have been destroyed in the fighting. What would have happened if the controls had been set for one of those? Then what?
Most in the wilderness areas were destroyed. As to your question, I suppose that possibility represents the final frontier.
You crazy bastard!
Leave him be! Let's go see where we are.
I'm obliged, Mr. Carter. Most of all, I would dislike having to strike a lady. Next, I would dislike being struck by one.
The door opened easily. Opened onto a room of the same scale as the one back at the redoubt. Any of Ryan's doubts were dispelled when he saw a table knocked over on its side and two of the shelves slipping lopsidedly. A long crack ran down the wall, deep enough to insert a hand. In the next room, the consoles whirred and lights danced, but there was an undertone of grinding. Ryan could smell the frail scent of smoldering fire that slumbered somewhere within the machinery that surrounded him. He could see all eight of his group reflected in the smeared metal of the door that he knew would open on a blank passage. To the right of it, there was a green lever in the down position, with the word closed printed beneath it. Ryan grasped the lever and pushed it up to the open position. It moved easily, as though it swam in a greased slot. For a moment, nothing happened. Then the grinding of gears, and then the door began to slide back.
Oh, shut it!
A thin sheet of filthy water came gushing through the widening crack at the edge of the door. Water immediately flowed about their feet, carrying innumerable wriggling creatures with scaly skins and ferocious rows of tiny teeth. Ryan immediately threw the lever down again. It seemed to take forever, but the door finally hissed shut and the water stopped. Hen kicked at one of the reptiles that had fastened onto the sole of his boot.
It's fucking hot, Ryan.
It came all the way from top to bottom. This redoubt is underwater. Maybe under shallow water. Maybe under whole fathoms.
There is a 30-minute automatic reset on the gates. If we make haste, we should be back in the redoubt in the darks.
They splashed through the filth of mud and water, crushing the seething life as they moved. There was a step into the actual Matrans chamber, and the slime had not penetrated it. They all stepped in, and JB reached to close the door.
Hold on. If we're gonna pass out, I guess it's better if we sit down first.
They sat in a ring, Christy opposite Ryan. Their eyes met, and he winked at her. He enjoyed the hint of a smile on her full lips. And she was a beauty. The door closed, and once again, darkness clawed its way over Ryan's mind, blanking it out. The moment of wakening was less painful, the headache gone, but the feeling of disorientation was still as strong. It was as if every atom in Ryan's body had been juggled around and clumsily reassembled. Ryan opened his eye. The walls were brown glass. By the texture, it looked armored. It was not possible to guess its thickness.
Come on, people. Doc, you know how to reset this machine?
Yes, indeed, Mr. Corder. But I must repeat that it is a random element. All instructions and codes are gone these many, many years. I can alter the setting, and then it will be in the lapse of what gods we worship.
I worship my M16.
As he checked that everyone had recovered, Ryan wondered yet again about Doc's range of knowledge. Lots of it could have come from some hoard of old books or vids. There was no other sensible explanation. But he knew so much. Spoke as if he'd been here before. Been here 100 years ago. They were back in the clean antiseptic anteroom. Ryan tugged the door open, hearing the faint whisper of sound that told him that it was airlocked. He pulled harder, and it swung open. The master control room now held a dozen or more of the squat, muscular Indians. Oki reacted fastest, and Ryan winced at the stream of bullets that burst past him.
Don't fire! Damage anything and we'll never jump again!
Ryan reached for his heavy Ponka, drawing it from its stitched leather sheath, thrusting at the face of the nearest of the Indians. It cleaved through the open mouth, splintering teeth as it did so. Blood gushed, hot and salty, into Ryan's face, nearly blinding him. But the man was down and done, drowning in a choking flood of scarlet. Around him, the most desperate battle raged. Oki used her gun like a club, smashing one man across the side of the head, kicking him hard in the groin as his hands went to grab her. Han and Finnegan had both drawn their knives, automatically fighting back to back, the steel of their blades making a deadly web that snared any of the Sioux who tried to get within it. JB had his delicate knives, one in each hand, the thin blades opening up hideous gashes in the stomach of the man attacking him. As the man reeled away, Hun used her own broad-bladed dagger to slit his throat. Blood from the jugular pattered onto the concrete floor, making it slick and treacherous. Christy ducked and weaved against a taller Indian, her hair seeming to foam back and forth in the man's face, blinding him. But she did not carry a long-bladed knife, and she was in desperate trouble.
Christy!
Ryan punched a grinning face, knocking it away from him, and raised the Ponka as he closed on Christy's attacker. The impact jarred Ryan's arm, but the steel was honed enough and weighted enough to hack clean through the skin and flesh and bone of the neck. The head, eyes staring, tongue moving, rolled and bounced among the fighter's feet, while the body gradually slumped to the floor as though reluctant to submit to death.
Thanks.
Anytime.
Christy backed away to join Doc near the door through to the gateway.
Son of a bitch!
Hen was staggering, blood streaming from a cut along the side of his thigh. With Finnegan holding off a pair of the Indians, each armed with a triangular axe, Ryan dashed to help Finnegan cover Hen's retreat.
Make for the door!
Hun reached the door first, stabbing the nearest of the attackers so hard that the steel snapped and she withdrew only the hilt, grinning at the shocked and puzzled expression on the bronzed face of the man she had just killed. Doc, Christy, Hen, and Finnegan were through into the anteroom, watching anxiously as their friends still battled on. 9 or 10 of the Indians were down, dying or dead. But 4 more had come in, 2 armed with bows and arrows.
Back!
Ryan pushed Hunniker in front of him, parrying a lunge from a feather-tipped spear, turning and spilling the man's guts in loops of greasy intestine around his feet. Oki stood, legs braced to one side of the doorway, the M16 steady in her hands, awaiting a chance to open fire at the enemy without harming the electrical equipment in its serried banks. JB followed Hun through, then Ryan was in the doorway, tapping Oki on the arm. At the far end of the control room, more of the Sioux came pouring in. An arrow hit the wall at Ryan's side, and he snapped off a 3-round burst at the man who had loosed it. The rounds kicked the man onto his back, knocking others over with the violence of his dying. Another arrow clipped Oki's right shoulder, pinning her to the wall by the material of her jacket.
Bastard!
She reached and snapped the shaft of the arrow, throwing it contemptuously on the concrete. Then she ripped in half the man who had wounded her. His body jerked and danced, held up by the force of the bullets that stitched him apart. As she took her finger off the trigger, he fell sideways, crashing into one of the consoles, where sparks flew and a siren began to howl deep in the recesses of the redoubt.
That screws it!
Ryan grabbed Oki and pulled her after him. There wasn't time to close the intervening door. The rest of them were already in the glass-walled chamber.
Ryan, come on!
More arrows sliced by them, one plucking at the hem of Ryan's coat.
Get down!
The armored door began to close the moment they were all inside. Ryan was last. Final shaft missed his left elbow by a hair's breadth, hitting the control panel to the gateway, splintering one of the numbered buttons, breaking the plastic cover, revealing all the mass of tangled, multicolored wiring beneath. As the door closed, Ryan's last glimpse of the redoubt in the darks was a worm of smoke inching from the damaged control. An arrow pinged against the glass, but the thick plate held fast. The fog rose about them, and the metal discs glowed brightly. Ryan felt himself being sucked into the maelstrom and fought against losing consciousness. But the physical disturbance was too severe, and the darkness swamped his mind. Ryan opened his eye. As before, his seven comrades were lying all around him. Finnegan was snoring flat on his back, revealing a mouthful of teeth that overlapped and jostled one another like a view into an excavated graveyard. JB's glasses had become dislodged from his thin nose and lay on the floor. Hunniker was curled into a fetal ball, eyes blinking as she began to recover. Hen held his leg, the blood still trickling steadily from it. Oki was also bleeding, crimson rivulets threading from between her fingers as she clamped her hand over the superficial flesh wound in her shoulder. Her other hand held the M16 tight. Christy was sitting up, shaking her head to clear the mist from it. The front of her overalls was soaked with blood from the Indian that Ryan had decapitated. Doc sat up, a small pool of yellow bile near his feet. He looked toward Ryan.
Upon my... I am becoming too old for this sort of foolishness, sir. Indeed I am.
If they wreck the redoubt up in the darks, then what if we tried to get back?
Not a wise idea, Mr. Corder. I will alter the setting so that the automatic return is negated. That is, if we should decide not to remain here.
Where is here, Doc?
The glass was a pale gray color, and as Ryan stood, he noticed that there was a network of very fine cracks lacing the plate. The air smelled bad. He could taste the oily flavor of methane on his tongue, and some other bitter chemical.
Ugh, don't like this. JB, you come with me. Rest of you stay here. Doc, you'd best alter the control.
You do appreciate that I can change them so we don't return, but I have no control over where we might eventually finish up.
Yeah, just do it, Doc. Ready, JB?
As I'll ever be.
As soon as they left the Matrans chamber, Ryan sensed something was wrong. Gravely wrong. The bitter flavor of the air was stronger, and it was very warm. The door to the anteroom was already ajar. There was no furniture there at all, and the walls were marked with deep gouges and scratches, with smears of burned ash across the ceiling. When they reached the outer door, it was also partly open, showing nothing but a great darkness outside.
Don't like it, Ryan.
I know what you mean.
Ryan moved to the door and peered out. The darkness was not total. The sky glowed an unimaginably deep red, with flashes of lightning scattered across it. But each bolt of lightning stayed in place for several seconds, as though frozen there. Distant thunder rumbled. The land seemed flat and sandy, from what they could make out in the strip of light that spilled out through the open doorway. On a sudden, instinctive impulse, Ryan flicked on the small Geiger counter in his lapel. Immediately began to crackle and click louder than he ever thought possible.
Shit! It's a hot spot!
There's enough Millerads here to fry a war wag. Let's go.
As he turned, Ryan glimpsed something moving out in that seared desert. Something blasphemously huge, lumbering toward the remnants of the redoubt. He hadn't made out the shape of the entity, except that it had seemed in that single glimpse to have no true shape at all.
Fire blast! Go! Now!
With the knowledge of that horror at his heels, Ryan pushed JB ahead of him, past the banks of machines, many silent and blind. He saw the others gathered in the door of the chamber, and the look on his face propelled them into instant action. Guns sprang into hands.
No, just get out!
My good sir, I've altered the setting.
No time, Doc!
Ryan elbowed Doc aside, pulling the door and slamming it shut behind JB and himself. The lights came on, and the thick mist rose about their feet.
Here we go. Where to this time?
Somewhere better.
Ryan felt the suction of his mind and the atoms and molecules of his body being displaced. But even as the displacement occurred, and in spite of it, Ryan Cotter knew, with a profound and gratifying certainty, that in fact they had already achieved, truly achieved, what he and Christy had set out to do. They had broken from the bonds that were at the heart of the Deathlands. They had entered the forbidden places, deep into the darks, and they had found something. Something other than their dreary experience in the Deathlands. Something that by its very newness spelled hope for a different life, a different future. That was what they had always yearned for, quested for, put their lives on the line for. Now, Ryan and his woman, and JB and their warrior allies, and the strange character called Doc, were free at last of the deadening reality of the Deathlands. Free to live anew, even if the new life was hazardous and unknown. Through love and through death, they had come this far, and they had seen so much. And now, the darkness fell once more over them all. Ryan opened his eye. Deathlands, Pilgrimage to Hell is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2005, The Cutting Corporation. Performed by Richard Rowan with Terrence Aselford, Colleen Delaney, Timberly Chanel, Kate Torrey, Michael Replogle, Christopher Graybill, Christopher Walker, Thomas Penny, and Mort Shelby. With additional red shirts by Chris Rowan and Nathaniel Perry. Directed by Rick Rowan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Vocal editing by Brian Patton and Dan Smith. Graphic audio sound design by Brian Patton and Dan Smith. The Deathlands theme was composed by Mark Ashby. Additional original music by Dan Smith. Script adapted for graphic audio by Mort Shelby. If you enjoyed Deathlands, be sure to look for James Axler's Outlanders. Keep listening for exciting previews after these announcements.
The following preview is of a graphic audio production rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Outlanders number 29, Sun Lord.
Grant, where's Kane?
Kane has been snatched away from his friends in the middle of a jump. Now, suffering from amnesia, he finds himself in a strange land with stranger powers.
Concentrate. You have powers beyond your wildest imagination.
Okay, but I don't see what good in them. Whoa! Did I do that?
Of course. You are the Sun Lord. Welcome back, Tonatio. Welcome back to the front lines.
Dearest Bridget, I'm afraid we must come to terms with our loss.
We have to find him. He's still alive. I know it.
Bridget Baptiste has been having dreams. Dreams that may reunite Kane with his friends.
Baptiste!
Kane!
Where am I? I'm here.
Kane!
I'm here. Where is here?
Kane! I know where he is.
But getting to him may require sacrificing more than they can bear. Their very souls.
Well, I am very pleased that you are all here. Now, please make yourselves at home, for you will die if you leave.
Outlanders 29, Sun Lord.
Outlanders number 29, Sun Lord, will be in travel centers and truck stops throughout North America starting November 2005. Or call 1-800-670-5220 to reserve or download your advance copy. For your convenience, this information is also printed on the cover of this book.
Breaking news. We have just received a video purported to be from the group responsible for the massive explosion in America's heartland today.
Our strike against the United States had a number of objectives. To pay back the United States for the unprovoked and cowardly attack on Iraq by letting the American people see how it is to suffer. We also wanted to show that Americans are not safe at home any longer. We have the means and the will to strike within your borders when and where we like. The American government is powerless to stop us. There will be more attacks. We have our people in place and we have the weapons. Prepare yourselves. America's days are numbered.
Saddam Hussein's regime has not disbanded. They have been reunited by a man the world thought dead. They are gathering the money and the weapons to make good their threats. And the only things standing in their way are the men and women of Stony Man Farm, the president's covert intelligence agency.
Move it! Move it!
It's time we started to hit back using their methods. It's time we stopped playing by the rule book our enemies discarded a long time ago.
You will tell us what we need to know, Mr. Schwartz. Who has betrayed us?
We have God on our side. That is why we will destroy you, because we are chosen.
Stony Man number 76, Gathering Storm. Be there. Your life depends on it.
Stony Man number 76, Gathering Storm, will be in travel centers and truck stops throughout North America starting November 2005. Or call 1-800-670-5220 to reserve or download your advance copy. For your convenience, this information is also printed on the cover of this book.
The Executioner number 307, Hard Pursuit. We got him. Amur ibn Laoud, wealthy terrorist mastermind, is in the custody of the FBI. He sits, bound hand and foot, in the hold of an airborne C-130, for the moment.
We have an enemy aircraft shadowing us. This aircraft is under threat of a shootdown. Get your people prepared now.
Hydraulics are going dead!
I'm bringing her in! Brace for impact!
Get them! Get them all! I want them all executed!
Now Laoud has escaped with American hostages. Mac Bolan, along with FBI agent Orlando Wasdy and U.S. Marshal David Kowalski, pursue them from the broiling desert sands.
You think the three of us can take on a squad of Islamic ninja terrorists on motorcycles? It's pretty long odds.
You get used to it.
To a tanker in the middle of the ocean.
Stryker, what's your sit rep?
I'm in the hold with the fuel tanks right now. I need you to get those men out of here ASAP.
You mean you're going to set those charges? The minimum safe distance is...
unreachable, if I'm swimming for it.
Holy shit.
Ready to finish this day off with a bang?
Executioner number 307, Hard Pursuit, will be in travel centers and truck stops throughout North America starting November 2005. Or call 1-800-670-5220 to reserve or download your advance copy. For your convenience, this information is also printed on the cover of this book.
Don't waste time searching the stores for the next installment of your favorite series or stories you've missed. Call 1-800-670-5220 and order direct in CD, cassette, or MP3 CD formats. Or plug into Graphic Audio's website, where you can order it in those formats. Or, for accelerated gratification, download it right now for your computer or digital player. It'll be online before anywhere else. You'll also get free screensavers, ringtones, games, and other goodies. www.cuttingaudio.com and 1-800-670-5220.